Verna embraced the trembling woman as she wept softly while clutching at Verna's cloak. Verna still had the dakra in her fist, behind Janet's back. Verna eased her away to smile at the tear-stained face. She wiped away some of the tears and smoothed back Janet's dark locks. Janet kissed her ring finger, an ancient gesture beseeching the Creator's protection. Even though she had been reasonably sure Janet was loyal to the light, Verna was relieved to see such confirmation. A sister of the dark was sworn to the keeper of the underworld and would never kiss her ring finger. It was an act that represented a sister's symbolic betrothal to the Creator. It was the one thing that a sister of the dark could not do. A sister of the dark could not hide her loyalty to her true master, the keeper, by kissing her ring finger, for kissing that finger would invoke her dark master's wrath. Verna slipped the dakra back up her sleeve as Janet glanced back at Warren. They exchanged smiles. Both Verna and Warren took in Janet's bizarre garb. She was barefoot. The baggy garment, cinched at the waist with a white cord, covered her from ankles to neck to wrists, but was so sheer that the woman might as well have been naked. Between a thumb and finger, Verna tugged out some of the diaphanous material. "What in the name of creation are you doing wearing this?" Janet glanced down at herself. "Jagang makes all his slaves dress like this. After a while, you don't even notice anymore." "I see." Verna could see that Warren was doing his best to avert his eyes.
"Verna, what are you doing here?" Janet asked in a demure voice.
Verna grinned and pinched Janet's cheek.
"I came to get you out of here, silly. I came to rescue you. We're friends. Did you think I'd leave you here?"
Janet blinked in astonishment.
"The prelate let you come after me?"
Verna lifted her hand, showing the woman the sunburst-patterned ring of the prelate.
"I am the prelate."
Janet's jaw fell open. She dropped to the floor and began kissing the hem of Verna's dress. Verna gripped Janet's shoulder and urged her to her feet.
"Stop that. There's no time for that."
But how? What happened? How can this be? What has happened?"
"Verna, those webs won't hold for long," Warren cautioned in a thin whisper. "We've already overstayed our welcome."
"Janet, listen to me. We can talk later after we get you out of here. The things we had to do to get in here only give us a brief time to get back out. It's dangerous for us to be here."
"I should say so," Janet said.
"Prelate, you must..."
"Verna, we're friends. It's still Verna."
"Verna, how in creation did you ever get into Jagang's stronghold? You must get out at once. If you are found..."
Verna frowned and touched the ring through Janet's lower lip.
"What's this?"
Janet paled.
"It marks me as one of Jagang's slaves."
She started shivering.
"Verna, save yourself. Get out of here. You must get out,"
she whispered urgently.
"I agree," Warren whispered through gritted teeth. "Let's go."
Verna pushed her cloak back over her shoulders out of the way.
"I know. Now that we've got you, we can go."
"Dear Creator, you have no idea how much I'd like to go with you. But if I did, you can't imagine what Jagang would do to me. Oh, dear Creator, you can't imagine."
Her eyes flooded with tears at the very thought. Verna embraced her for a moment.
"Janet, listen to me. I'm your friend. You know I wouldn't lie to you."
She waited until the other nodded.
"There is a way to keep the dreamwalker from your mind."
Janet clutched Verna's dress at the shoulders.
"Verna, don't torment me with hope that I know is false. You have no idea how much I'd like to believe you, but I know..."
"It's true. Listen to me, Janet. I'm the prelate now. Don't you think Jagang would take me if he could? Why do you think he hasn't taken the others? He can't. That's why."
Janet was shivering again, tears running down her cheeks. Warren put a hand to her back.
"What Verna says is true, Sister Janet. Jagang can't get into our minds. Come with us and you will be safe. Hurry."
"How?"
Janet whispered.
Verna leaned close. "You remember Richard?"
"Of course. Trouble and wonder in one person."
Verna smiled at the truth of that.
"He has the gift. That's why I went after him. But there is more to it. He is born with both sides of it. More than that, though, he is a Raw. 3,000 years ago, in the Great War, Richard's ancestor created a magic to block the dreamwalkers of that time from his people's minds. That magic was passed down to his descendants who have the gift. Janet's fists tightened on Verna's dress.
How does it work?
Verna smiled. It's so simple that it's hard to believe. The most powerful magic is sometimes like that. All that is necessary is to be sworn to him in your heart, and his magic protects you from the dreamwalker. As long as Richard is alive and in this world, Jagang will never again be able to enter your mind.
I swear allegiance to Richard, and I'm free of Jagang?
Verna nodded at the woman's stunned face.
It's true. What do I have to do?
Verna held up a finger to forestall Warren's objections. She went to her knees, pulling Janet down with her.
Say the words with me, and mean them in your heart. Richard is a war wizard, and leads us in our fight against Jagang. We believe in him, in his heart, with all our hearts. Say the words with me, and believe, and you will be free.
Janet nodded as she clasped her hands prayerfully. Tears coursed down her cheeks. Verna whispered the devotion, pausing so Janet could repeat the words after her.
Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours.
Janet's whispered words echoed Verna's until she was finished. Verna kissed Janet's cheek.
You are free, my friend. Now hurry. Let's get out of here.
Janet snatched Verna's sleeve.
What about the others?
Verna hesitated.
Janet, I would like nothing better than to rescue the rest of our sisters too, but I can't. Not now. We will try to get them later. If we try now, Jagang will have us. I came to get you because you are my friend, and I love you. The five of us all swore to always protect each other. Phoebe is with us already. There is only you left. As much as I want to rescue the rest of our sisters, it must be left until later. I promise you, I won't forget them or leave them, but we can't do it all now, all at once.
Janet's head lowered, and she stared at the floor.
Jagang killed Christabel. I saw him do it. Her screams still haunt my nightmares. Her screams. And Jagang.
Verna felt as if she had been punched in the gut. Christabel had been her best friend. She didn't want to know the details. Christabel had turned to the keeper.
That's why I have to get you out of here, Janet. My fear for you and for what Jagang has done to you haunts my nightmares.
Janet's head came up.
What about Amelia? She was one of us five. We can't leave her.
Verna gave Janet a level look.
Amelia is a sister of the dark. Was,
Janet said.
No longer. What?
Verna whispered. Warren leaned over.
Once you're sworn to the keeper, you can't change your mind. You can't trust what she says, Sister Janet. Now let's get out of here. She's sworn to the keeper.
Janet shook her head.
No longer. Jagang sent her on some sort of mission involving magic, and in order to accomplish her task, she was forced to betray the keeper.
Impossible, Verna said.
True,
Janet insisted.
She's back. She has resworn her oath to the Creator. I've talked to her. She sits and weeps, kissing her ring finger half the night, praying to the Creator.
Verna leaned closer, looking into Janet's eyes.
Janet, listen to me. Have you seen her kiss her ring finger? Have you seen it with your own eyes? Are you absolutely sure she wasn't kissing another finger? I've sat with her, trying to comfort her. I've watched her.
Janet kissed her own finger with a whispered supplication that if she wasn't telling the truth, she would be struck dead.
Just like that. She kisses her finger just like that. Yes, she kisses her finger and cries and prays that the Creator will kill her for the horror of what she has done.
What has she done?
I don't know. When I ask, she practically goes crazy with screaming and weeping. Jagang won't let her kill herself. He has control of her mind as he does with the rest of us. He wouldn't let any of us kill ourselves. We must continue to serve him. Verna, we can't leave Amelia here. We have to take her with us. I won't leave her here. I'm the only comfort she has in this world. The things Jagang does to her...
Verna turned away. Her stomach roiled at the thought of leaving Amelia, if indeed she had abandoned the keeper.
The five of them had been best friends for close to 150 years, since they were young novices. The life of a Sister of the Light was a difficult one. They had sworn oaths always to protect one another.
Verna, she is one of us, a Sister of the Light again. She is one of us five. Please, Verna, I'd rather stay with her than leave her here alone.
Verna glanced back to Janet's haunted eyes.
Verna, we must call him Excellency,
Janet said in a shuddering whisper.
If we displease him for any reason at all, we have to serve a week in the tents.
Warren spoke Verna's name with rising inflection. Verna waved him to silence. The tents. What are you saying? Janet's eyes flooded with tears again.
He gives us to his soldiers for a week. We have gold rings, so they won't kill us, because those with gold rings belong to Jagang. But they can do whatever else they want. They pass us from tent to tent for a week. Even the old sisters are sent to the tents. Jagang calls it a lesson in discipline that all must learn.
Janet fell to her knees, convulsing in sobs as she covered her mouth with both hands. Verna sank down beside her and hugged her.
You don't know what Jagang's men do to us,
Janet cried.
You don't know, Verna.
I understand, Verna whispered. Hush now. It's all right now. We'll get you away from here.
Janet shook her head against Verna's shoulder.
I won't leave Amelia here. I'm all she has. I'm a Sister of the Light. The Creator would never forgive me if I abandoned her. If I leave her, I'd be leaving my duty to the Creator. She's my friend. She came back to the Light. She came back to the Creator. Jagang sent her to the tents again. If I'm not here when she comes back, she'll go crazy. No one else will tend to her. The Sisters of the Dark won't go near her, and the Sisters of the Light won't forgive her. I'm her only friend. I'm the only one who forgave her and accepted her back to the Light. She'll be a bloody mess when she gets back. You don't know what Jagang's men are like. Except for broken bones, Jagang won't allow us to use the gift to heal one another when we come back from the tents. He says it's part of the lesson that our souls may belong to the Creator when we die, but in this life, Jagang owns our bodies. We can have our broken bones knitted by the gift when we come back, but until then, we have to suffer the agony of that along with everything else. If I'm not here, no one else will heal that much for her or comfort her.
Janet was nearly hysterical.
I won't leave without Amelia.
Verna felt dizzy and sick to her stomach. Her heart pounded in terror. Bile rose into her throat. Verna's voice broke.
How do you endure it?
Janet held her fists to her heart.
We are Sisters of the Light. We must endure for the Creator.
Verna shared a long look with Warren's troubled eyes.
Do you know where we can find her? Maybe we could go find her and take her with us.
Janet shook her head.
We're past among the tents. She could be anywhere. The army is spread out for miles and miles in every direction. Not long ago, more captured women were sent back here. Screams are everywhere, so you can't simply follow the sounds of screams. Besides, if we went out among the tents, we wouldn't last 5 minutes before we were dragged into one of them.
How long? Verna asked. How long until Amelia is back?
5 days. But she won't be able to walk for at least a day after that. Maybe two.
Verna held a tight grip on her rage.
There's nothing saying I can't use my gift to cure her once she's back.
Janet looked up.
That's true. 5 days, then. Tomorrow night is the full moon, the fourth day after the full moon.
Are you able to leave this place? In order to meet us, I don't think we can get back in here again.
Not very far. I can't even imagine how you could have gotten in here.
Verna showed the woman a tight smile.
I'm not prelate for nothing. Warren helped, too. We'll come back 4 nights after the full moon.
Verna, there's one other thing. If Jagang can't enter my dreams, he will know something is wrong.
Verna pressed her hands to her face.
But you've already given the oath. You can't take it back or it would mean nothing. You have already given your heart to Richard.
Then I'll have to be careful.
Can you do that? Can you get away with it?
Janet touched her fingers to her lips.
What choice do I have? I'll have to.
Verna held out her dakra. Here, at least you can protect yourself. Janet pushed it away as if it were poison.
If I was caught with that thing, I'd be sent out to the tents for a year.
Well, at least you can use your gift now that Jagang can't enter your mind to prevent it.
It won't do any good here. Jagang has total control over all those with the gift who are here, sisters and wizards. It would be spinning into a storm to try to use my gift against them.
I know. That's why we can't try to take the others right now. We'd never make it. The Sisters of the Dark would fight us, and with their use of subtractive magic they would cut us to pieces. Verna pressed her lips together.
Janet, are you sure about this?
If I don't help a sister in dire need, then what good is my oath as a Sister of the Light? One has come back to us from the Keeper. Perhaps she can teach us how to bring the others back.
Verna had never thought of that. Warren was making impatient eye signals. She could see the muscles in his jaw flexing. Janet saw, too. She gripped Verna by the shoulders and kissed her cheeks. She turned and hugged Warren.
Please, Verna, get out of here before it's too late. I'll be able to endure 5 days. I know how to bow and scrape for Jagang. He's been busy. Maybe I can stay out of his sight for that long.
All right. Where? We came down the coast to Grafen Harbor, and I don't know the lay of the land.
The coast? Then you would have passed the watch house near the docks.
Yes, I saw the place, but it had guards in it.
Janet leaned close.
As you said, there's nothing stopping you from using your gift. The guard changes around sundown. Wait until you see the guard change, and then silence them. That will give you a safe place to wait until nearly dawn. Sometime in the night, I will be there with Amelia.
The watch house, then. Fourth night after the full moon.
Janet gave her a quick hug.
5 nights and we're free. Hurry, get out of here.
Warren snatched Verna's arm and pulled her through the door. Chapter 54. Soon after he awoke, just before dawn, Richard stood outside his bedroom reading the morning report. For the first time, the number of dead in one night had climbed over 1,000. 1,000 tragedies in one night. Ulick, standing not far away with his massive arms folded, asked the number. A rare event, Ulick asking a question. Richard couldn't speak. He handed the report to his bodyguard. Ulick sighed heavily when he read the number. The city was in shambles. Trade had been disrupted to the point that food was getting scarce. Firewood, used for both heat and cooking, was hard to come by. Services of every kind were difficult to secure, either because people were afraid to bring their wares into the city, they had abandoned their homes and fled the city, or they were dead. Only the cures in the streets were in abundance. Richard paused beside a long tapestry of a city market scene as he was headed for his office. His shadow glided to a silent halt behind him. The thought of going back to translating the book made him nauseous. He was finding nothing new anyway. He was mired in a long report on an inquiry into the dealings wizard Ricker had with a people called the Andolians. It was boring and made little sense to him. Richard couldn't face the book again this early in the day. Besides, he was worried sick about Raina. In the last week, she had only gotten worse. Nothing could be done for her, any more than anything could be done for the 1,000 people who had died the night before. Shota had told Colin that the Temple of the Winds would send another message, would send a way to get in. The spirit had told her the same thing. Why hadn't it come? Would they all be dead before the winds sent word? Richard glanced out an east window and saw the first rays of the morning sun coming from between two mountains. With the gathering clouds he had already seen coming in from the west, he knew that they wouldn't be seeing the full moon that night. He headed for Colin's room. He had to see her face, see something that could lift his spirits. Ulick took up station beside Egan at the corner of the hall. Egan had been with Colin's guard the night before. Richard was greeted by Nancy just coming out the door. Is Colin up? Nancy pulled the door closed behind herself. She glanced up the hall to see Ulick and Egan. They were too far away to hear.
Yes, Lord Rawl. She's just a little slow this morning. She isn't feeling well.
Richard gripped the woman's arm. He thought that Colin had looked out of sorts for the last few days, but she had steadfastly dismissed his concerns. Richard could feel the blood draining from his face. "What's wrong? Is she sick?" "She doesn't..."
"No, no,"
Nancy insisted, suddenly realizing that she had frightened the wits out of him.
"Nothing like that."
"Then what's wrong?" Richard pressed. The woman patted her lower belly and leaned close. She let her voice drop to little more than a whisper.
"It's just her cycle of the moon, that's all. It'll be over in a couple more days. I wouldn't say anything, mind you, but with the plague, I don't want you to worry yourself to death. Just don't tell her I told you, or she'll bite off my head."
Richard sighed as he smiled with relief. He squeezed Nancy's hand in appreciation. "Of course not. Thank you, Nancy. You don't know how much that eases my mind. I couldn't endure it if she..." Nancy touched his arm as she gave him a warm smile.
"I know. That's the only reason I said anything."
After Nancy had trundled off down the hall, Richard knocked on the door. Colin had been just about to open it and was surprised to find him standing there. She smiled up at him.
"I was wrong."
"About what?"
"You are more handsome than I remembered."
Richard grinned. She had lifted his spirits. He gave her a quick kiss when she rose on her toes and puckered her lips. Richard gathered up her hand. "I'm on my way to check on Raina. Want to come with me?" She nodded, the mirth ghosting away from her face. Verdine met them not far from their room. Her eyes were red and leaden. She wore red leather. Richard didn't ask why.
"Lord Rawl, please. Raina is asking for you."
Richard enclosed her shoulders with one arm. "We were on our way there. Come on." Richard didn't ask how Verdine was. It was obvious she was sick with worry. "Verdine, some people have recovered from the plague. No one is stronger than Raina. She is Mord Sif. She will be one of the ones who recovers." Verdine nodded woodenly. Raina was lying on her bed. She was wearing her red leather. Standing in the doorway, Richard leaned toward Verdine and whispered, "Why is she dressed?" He left the obvious question of why she was wearing her red leather unasked. Verdine clutched his arm.
"She asked me to dress her in the red leather of a Mord Sif."
Verdine stifled a wail.
"For the final battle."
Richard sank to his knees beside the bed. Raina's half-open eyes rolled toward him. Sweat ran from her face, her lower lip quivered. Raina gripped Richard's arm.
"Lord Rawl, please, take me out to see Reggie."
"Reggie?"
"The chipmunks. Please take me out to feed Reggie. He's the one missing the end of his little tail."
His heart breaking, he smiled for her.
"It would be my honor."
He scooped her up in his arms. She had lost a lot of weight. She hardly weighed anything. Raina wrapped a weak arm around his neck as she cuddled her head to his shoulder while he carried her through the halls. Verdine walked beside them, holding Raina's other hand. Colin walked at his other side. Ulick and Egan marched behind. Soldiers along the way silently stepped clear, eyes to the ground, giving a salute of fist to heart as Richard and the procession passed. The salute was for Raina. Outside, Richard sat on the stone court in the light of the dawning sun, holding Raina in his lap. Verdine sat on her heels by her head. Colin sat on his other side. Ulick and Egan, hands clasped behind their backs, stood not far to the rear. Richard saw a tear or two wend its way down each of their stony faces.
"Over there," Richard said to Colin, pointing with his chin. "Give me that box."
Colin turned and saw what he meant. He kept seeds in a box under a stone bench. She wiggled off the lid and held out the box. Richard scooped out a handful of seeds and tossed some on the ground before them. He trickled the rest into Raina's bony hand. It wasn't long before two chipmunks, tails twitching, scampered across the lawn. Richard had fed them enough so they knew that the appearance of people might mean food. They stuffed seeds in their cheeks as best they could between sudden, chattering bouts of trying to chase each other away.
Raina watched, her eyes only half opened. Her aegil dangled from the chain on the wrist of the hand that Berdin held. The two chipmunks, their cheeks full, scurried for their burrows to store their booty. Raina opened her arm out and rested her hand on the paving stone. She uncurled her fingers. Each shallow breath rattled. Berdin tenderly stroked Raina's forehead. Another chipmunk appeared from under a bush. He came partway toward them, froze stiff while he checked for threat, and then dashed the rest of the way. He was missing the end of his tail.
Reggie,
Raina breathed. Raina smiled as Reggie climbed into her open hand. He sat there, pressing his little feet against her fingers as he popped seeds into his mouth with his tongue. He paused, sitting up in her hand, to rearrange the seeds stuffed in his cheeks. Satisfied, he dropped back down, putting his little feet to Raina's fingers again. Raina let out a soft giggle. Berdin kissed her forehead.
I love you, Raina,
she whispered.
I love you, Berdin.
Richard felt Raina's muscles go slack as she died in his arms while Reggie sat eating seeds from her hand. Chapter 55. Collins stood behind Richard as he sat in his chair in his office, her arms circled around his neck, her cheek laid against the top of his head as she wept. Richard rolled Raina's aegil in his fingers. Berdin said that Raina had wanted him to have it. Berdin had asked for permission to go up to the keep to tell Kara. She also asked if she could take her turn at watch over the sliff, as Kara had been up there for the last 3 days. Richard told her that she could do whatever she wished, for as long as she wished, and that if she wanted him to take her watch, or to come sit with her, he would. She had said that she wanted to be alone for a while.
Why hasn't the temple sent its message?
Colin smoothed his hair.
I don't know.
What are we going to do?
He asked. It wasn't a question for which he expected an answer.
I just don't know what to do.
Colin rubbed her palms up and down the sides of his shoulders.
Do you think you might find an answer in the trial record?
For all I know, it could be the very last line I translate that gives me any information I can use.
He slowly shook his head.
Long before I can translate every line, we'll all be dead.
Richard hooked Raina's aegil on the chain along with the amulet at his chest. The red color of the aegil matched the ruby. Silence hung in the air for a time before he said,
Jagang is going to win.
Colin turned his head toward her.
Don't say that. Please don't say that.
He forced a smile.
You're right. We'll beat him.
A knock came to the door. Ulick stuck his head in when Richard called to ask who it was.
Lord Rawl, General Curson wanted to know if he could talk to you for a minute.
Colin patted Richard's shoulder.
I'm going to go tell Drefin and Nadine about Raina.
Richard walked to the door with her. General Curson was waiting outside with his usual fistful of reports.
I'll catch up with you in a few minutes, Richard said.
As Colin left Richard to hear the general's reports, Egan fell in with her. It felt odd to be guarded by Egan alone, without a moored Sith. One of them had always seemed to be around.
Mother Confessor,
Egan said, some people just arrived at the palace and wanted to see you and Lord Rawl. I told them that everyone was busy. I didn't want to burden Lord Rawl.
Petitioner's Hall must be packed with people who want to see us, what with all the trouble.
They aren't in Petitioner's Hall. The guards stopped them as they went into one of the reception rooms. They aren't exactly arrogant, like some of the representatives I've seen, but they are insistent in an odd sort of way.
Colin frowned up at the huge blonde Aharon.
Did they say who they were? Did you find out that much, at least?
They said they were Andolians.
Colin jerked to a halt, seizing Egan's massive arm.
Andolians? And the guards let them in? They let Andolians in the palace?
Egan's brow drew down.
I didn't hear how they got in, only that they were here. Is this a problem, Mother Confessor?
The man's hand was already on his sword.
No, it's not that. It's just that... Dear spirits,
How do you explain the Andolians?
She searched for the right words.
They aren't exactly human.
What do you mean?
There are creatures of magic that live in the Midlands. There are people with magic who live in the Midlands. It is sometimes difficult to know where to place the line separating them. Some of these people with magic are part creature, like the Andolians.
Magic? Egan asked with obvious distaste. Are they dangerous?
Colin heaved a sigh as she changed her mind about where she was going and instead started out for the reception hall.
Not exactly. At least, not usually. Not if you know how to treat them. No one knows a great deal about the Andolians. We leave them alone. Most people of the Midlands have a strong dislike for them. The Andolians steal things. Not for the wealth of the object, but simply because the Andolians are fascinated by things. Shiny things, mostly. A piece of glass, a gold piece, or a button, it's all the same to them. People don't like them because the Andolians look much like you and I, and so people think they should behave like people, but they aren't people, exactly. They usually show up in places out of simple curiosity. We don't allow them in the palace because they cause such a disruption. It's best to simply keep them out. With the magic they have, if you try to discipline them, they can turn nasty. Very nasty.
Perhaps I should have the soldiers get rid of them.
No, that could get ugly. Dealing with them requires a very special kind of protocol. Fortunately, I know the protocol. I'll get rid of them.
How?
The Andolians like to carry messages. They like that more than anything, more than shiny objects even. They love to carry messages for people. I guess it makes them feel more connected to their human side to be involved in human affairs. Some people in the Midlands use them for that purpose. Andolians will carry a message more faithfully than any courier. They will do it for a shiny button. They would even do it for no compensation. They live to convey messages. All I have to do is give them a message to carry, and they will be off to deliver it. That's the easiest way to get rid of an Andolian.
Will it get rid of all of them? Egan asked as he scratched his head.
All of them? Dear spirits, don't tell me that there are more than a couple.
7. 6 women who all look alike, and 1 man.
Colin lost a stride.
I don't believe it. That would be the legate Rishi and his 6 wives, all sisters. The 6 sisters were all born of the same litter.
The Andolians believed that only a litter of 6 females were worthy to be the legate's wives. Colin's head spun as she tried to concentrate through the depression over Raina's death, over all the deaths. She had to think of a place to send the Andolians and a message for them to carry. Maybe something about the plague. She could send them somewhere with a warning about the plague. Maybe down into the wilds. Most of the people of the wilds tolerated the Andolians better than most other people in the Midlands. A throng of guards, bristling with weapons, filled the halls all around the reception room. 2 guards with pikes opened the tall mahogany-paneled doors as Colin and Egan approached. The reception hall, where waited the Andolians, was one of the smaller ones, without windows. Sculptures of every sort, from rulers' busts to a farmer and oxen, most done in pale marble, rested on square granite blocks placed back against the dark walls. Behind each sculpture, ornamental drapery of a rich maroon was swagged back to half columns of dark violet marble set against the walls between each sculpture. It lent each piece the air of being displayed on a stage, with curtains opening for them. 4 separate clusters of ornate lamps with cut glass chimneys hung on silver chains. Because of the dark decor, the dozens of lamps were unable to bring anything brighter than a somber atmosphere to the room. 3 heavy, dark tables sat on the black marble floor. The Andolians stood before one of these tables. The 6 sisters were tall and slender, and Colin couldn't tell one from another. Their hair was dyed a bright orange with the berries of a hasset bush that grew in the Andolians' homeland. Their homeland wasn't close. They had made a long journey to get to Adendril. Their big, round, black eyes watched Colin approach. Their orange hair, woven into hundreds of small braids, made the women look as if they wore wigs of orange yarn. Woven into the yarn-like hair were small, shiny things, buttons,
pieces of metal, gold and silver coins, shards of glass, chips of obsidian, any scrap that they found shiny enough for their taste. All six were dressed in simple but elegant white robes of a lustrous, satiny material. Despite what Colin knew about the Andolians, such as the way a simple storm could send them puling for protection under a bush or a hole in the ground, they had a noble air. Colin guessed that made sense. They were, after all, the wives of the legate, the leader of the Andolians. The legate himself was shorter than his wives, and much older. Other than his round, black eyes, he looked to be nothing more than a distinguished official, a bit on the stocky side. A bald pate shone above his fringe of white hair. Some kind of grease had been rubbed on it so as to make it glossy. He wore robes similar to his wives, but of gold material trimmed with rows of shiny objects sewn on. Each finger had at least one ring. From a distance, all the shiny objects made him look opulent. Closer up, he looked more like a crazy beggar who had dug through a midden heap to pluck out worthless items discarded by normal people. Legate Rishi's eyes were red-rimmed and leaden-looking. He wore a doltish grin and swayed on his feet. Colin saw him infrequently, but she didn't remember him this way. The six sisters formed into a line before him. They straightened, putting their shoulders back with pride.
"We share the moon,"
one of the six said.
"We share the moon,"
Colin said in their traditional greeting among females. Her waning cramps reminded her that the greeting had more than one meaning. The rest spoke the greeting in turn. The way those big black eyes blinked as they watched her gave Colin shivers. When they had finished with the official greeting, the six split into two groups of three and back to either side of their husband. The legate lifted a hand as if a king greeting a crowd. He grinned moronically. Colin frowned at his odd behavior, although she wasn't at all sure that for an Andolian it was odd.
"We share the sun," he said in a slur.
"We share the sun,"
Colin answered, but he ignored her as his attention was diverted by something behind her. Colin turned and saw Richard striding across the room, a glower heeding his expression.
"What's this about the moon?"
Richard asked as he came up beside Colin. She took his hand.
"Richard,"
she said in a tone of warning,
"this is Legate Rishi and his wives. They are Andolians. I have just given them their traditional greeting, that's all."
His expression slackened.
"Oh, I see. When they said something about the moon, I thought..."
The blood suddenly drained from Richard's face.
"Andolians," he whispered to himself. "Wizard Ricker was doing something with the Andolians."
He seemed lost in a confusion of thought.
"We share the sun,"
Legate Rishi said through his grin.
"The females share the moon. A female and a male share the sun, but not the moon."
Richard rubbed his brow. He looked engrossed in recollection or confusion. Colin squeezed his hand, hoping he would get the message to let her handle this. She turned back to the legate.
"Legate Rishi, I would like you to...
Our husband has been drinking things that make him happy,"
one of the wives said, as if it were a fascinating bit of news.
"He has been trading some of his prizes for his drink."
Her expression turned perplexed.
"It makes him slow, too, or we would have been here sooner."
"Thank you for telling me this,"
Colin said. One had always to thank an Andolian for any information they offered about themselves. Information about themselves so given was considered a gift. Colin turned her attention once more to the legate.
"Legate Rishi, I would like you to carry an important message for me."
"Sorry,"
the legate said.
"We can carry no message for you."
Colin was dumbfounded. She had never heard of an Andolian refusing to carry a message.
"But why not?"
One of the six leaned toward Colin.
"Because we already carry a message of great importance."
"You do?" Her big black eyes blinked.
"Yes. The greatest of all honors. Husband carries a message from the moon."
"You what?"
Richard whispered as his head came up.
The moon sends a message from the winds,
the Legate said in a drunken slur. Colin felt as if the world had frozen.
We would have been here sooner, but husband had to stop many times to have the drink of happiness.
Colin felt her whole body tingle with icy dread.
Been here sooner, Richard repeated. While all those people died, you've been drinking?
His voice boomed like thunder.
Raina died because you've been out getting drunk?
Richard exploded in a blur of movement, his fist striking Legate Rishi so hard that the man tumbled back over the table.
People are dying and you're out getting drunk?
Richard roared as he vaulted over the table.
Richard, no!
Colin shrieked.
He has magic!
Colin saw a blur of red racing in from the side. Kara came at a dead run and dived over the table, knocking Richard sprawling across the floor. Legate Rishi rose up in a rage. Blood frothed at his mouth, strings of it whipped from his chin. Wavering flares of light and undulating flutters of darkness radiated up his arms, gathering at his chest as he rose up. He was gathering his magic, preparing to unleash it against Richard. Richard went for his sword.
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.